Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lords of Limited. That's not Ben Wernie's voice you hear introducing the show. That's because he's off in MagicCon Atlanta. So I am here. I'm your host, Lord Tupperware, Ethan Sachs, and I'm joined by someone you've heard us reference a lot before. Someone said you have to have him on the show so you prove he's real. The man, the myth, the legend, Sam Pratt from the Rough Drafts podcast, a.k.a. Samp, is joining me this week. Welcome, Sam. How are you, bud?
Good. Thanks, Ethan. Thanks for having me. I'm very, very excited to be here. Excited to talk about Spider-Man Omen Paths cards.
Before we started recording, Sam asked me, he said, are you enjoying this set? And I said, I gave an answer, but then I said, let's save it. Let's have that discussion on air. So we are going to be doing Omen Paths 1, Spider-Man, whatever, first week. Perhaps one of, if not the most controversial set, I feel like, in terms of its existence, not necessarily in terms of the assessment of things, in terms of like people saying, I think this is good or this is bad in terms of archetypes. That doesn't feel that controversial, though I don't know if I'm as plugged in this week as I might normally be. So I'm curious to hear your thoughts, because I feel like you're quite plugged into a number of limited communities. So we'll talk about the set, we'll talk about Omen Paths, perhaps its reception, and then we'll also talk about some strats. We've got some draft logs to go through. We'll maybe talk about some enemy color pair stuff. All that good stuff is coming in just a second, but we are going to run through a little bit of housekeeping stuff, and then we'll get to pick Sam's brain on his thoughts on this format. So first things first, Patreon page, patreon.com/lordsoflimited, is where folks can go to give back to the show if they so choose. The show will always be free, but we have some great perks over at the Patreon. Two things we always want to shout out. One is access to our Discord, which is an excellent community of like-minded limited individuals. This week is MagicCon Atlanta. Sam and I are unfortunately not there, but Ben is there off gallivanting in the PTQ and doing a bunch of on-demand drafts. And the Discord is one of the things you get to do in the Discord is coordinate with other folks who are attending those cons. So I'm getting some FOMO as I see people saying, oh, we're going to go fire a draft, or what are we going to do tonight after the PTQ? And all that stuff can be done via the Discord, but also just watching along in the Pro Tour coverage and talking about the drafts and sharing draft logs and all that stuff like we usually do. Discord's great, and access to our podcast feed where you get this episode a day early ad-free, and also access to our weekly bonus episode of Lords Unlimited. So if any of all of that sounds of interest to you, head on over to the Patreon page. We want to shout out our patrons the first week that they join, and this week we're welcoming Silas and Milk Cows. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We really appreciate your support. In addition to the Patreon, the show is also brought to you by Fusion Gaming. FusionGamingOnline.com/Lords is your go-to destination for Magic the Gathering and more. Sam, I referenced this last week. I know you went, you did a purchase in the wild. You've got your cube, the Arena Cube, coming up at KubeCon next month, and you had a card you needed to fill out for that collection.
Yeah, I had to shell out for a Mox Opal, which is a key part of the artifact package. It was a big purchase. Fusion Gaming gave me, they had a pretty good price, and it, I know they're in Canada, so shipping can be a little weird. But yeah, it shipped to me really quick. Definitely recommend them.
Yeah, love to hear that last week. So awesome to hear a firsthand account. And like we've said in the past, it was great to hear a bunch of people who have Fusion Gaming as their LGS be like, oh, that's great. I love Fusion Gaming. Love Lords Limited. Glad to see they're partnered. And we are too. So if you're in Canada, as Sam said, they're in Canada. And so shipping might be a little bit of a bummer. But if you're there, it's a no-brainer. And even if you're elsewhere, you might be surprised just how Sam was at how competitive Fusion is on price and speed. So check them out at FusionGamingOnline.com/Lords. And let them know that we sent you. There is another thing that I want to shout out, which I wanted to wait until Sam was on the show to talk about, which is an upcoming grassroots Magic tournament called Shoebox. So Shoebox is a brand new Magic convention focusing on community-driven formats and friendly competition. And it's going to be held in Minneapolis/St. Paul, Minnesota, March 13th through 15th. And I think I first found out about this from you posting it on Blue Sky. And the reason it caught my attention is there is a team sealed 10K tournament at this. And I was like, when's the last time I've seen a team limited event in paper for years? Like the last one I played in was in Pittsburgh in 2020, 2021, I think.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, I'm really excited for this event.
Yeah.
The cube, the like grassroots cube conventions sort of deal. Those are really fun. I went to KubeCon last year. I'm going this year, obviously. My cube's in it. It's just such a great vibe, and I'm so excited to battle Team Limited. That's like such a rare opportunity.
Yeah, so you and me and Strix Familiar, Charlie, who is another Chicago native, a streamer from back when I was coming up and a good buddy of mine, we're going to team up together. Ben is unfortunately not going to be able to make it, but we're going to be going there. And the other thing I found out is that they're going to be having on-demand team drafts that weekend, which makes sense because, like, if you're going for competitive limited, the main event or the main competitive limited event there is a team sealed tournament. So you're going to be going with two buddies. So might as well keep those buddies with you when you're doing side drafts and side events, which is just awesome. So again, March 13th to 15th in St. Paul, Minnesota for badges and more information, you want to head to shoebox.gg and we'll have a link to that in the show notes as well.
If you've never like team drafted, done team limited, it's really fun. Like I cannot recommend it enough. Like the vibes of a team draft are just so much different than an individual draft because there's so much communication between your team members and it always comes down to game 9 or match 9. Yeah. It's so intense. I have like so many good memories of like 11 PM at Magic Con the past couple of years, like getting a team draft in and just like trying to wrap it up before the convention closes. And it's always like really intense at the end and very, very fun.
It's easily the best like form of Magic I've ever played are team events. And I think, and specifically in paper, there's just something again about being tactile, being able to like look over your buddy's shoulders to like whisper some strats to them, or as you might find out, Charlie is our third teammate. He likes to do some nonsense. He likes to show you an opening hand that is a clear mulligan and be like, oh, what should I do? Should I keep? Should I ship it? Which is also, that sort of shenanigans is also really fun. So check that out. You'll find us there. And if you're interested, I would say book sooner rather than later because this event is capped, right? It's like a grassroots movement. So they're only going to be able to have so much space. And so they're only going to have so much room for teams. So if this is something you want to do, which I think it should be, though, we are going to talk about, you know, they dropped yesterday at MagicCon Atlanta, what's going on in 2026 for Paper Magic. So we're going to want to talk about that as well. But I would put this on your calendar for sure. It's already on mine. Another thing I want to put on your calendar next week, there is a fundraiser on Magic Online, Vintage versus Type 1 from October 1st through 5th on Twitch. I participated in this last year, and this is going to be going on again this year in a slightly different form. And Type 1, meaning not the old constructed format, but Type 1 diabetes. So Vintage versus Type 1 is sort of a little play on words there. So what you want to do is go to Twitch, find streamers who are participating in this. I'll be one of them as best as I can be streaming, but we're going to be doing Vintage Cube drafts. Find streamers participating and donate, and you'll get, from your donations, you'll get some draft tokens for Magic Online to go hop in the cube as well. And if the streamers that you donate to win the trophy race, everyone who supported that streamer on the Tiltify page, the donations page, will get a unique Magic Online avatar created exclusively for the fundraiser, which is awesome. Last week, they had some really sweet playmats. I got one of those. Those were really cool. I don't talk about it that much, but I did when it came up. I got diagnosed with type 1 diabetes 3.5 years ago. It was a very scary event. I have no family history of it, but whatever. Went to the hospital, got it all sorted. I have diabetes managed. I have my insulin pump. I have my glucose monitor, but I don't talk about it that much. But it's a really serious, scary disease, and I'm lucky that I am in a place in my life where I can manage it, and I have access to good healthcare and medical devices and all that good stuff. But like, This kind of fundraiser to do research to try and find a cure for type 1 diabetes is massive. If that was found in my lifetime, that would be a huge game changer. And it's just a great opportunity to see people, you know, spewing their gems or whatever. I guess not gems on Magic Online, spewing their play points and tickets on Vintage Cube Drafts, and I will be one of them. So head on over to Twitch October 1st through 5th to find more information there. Okay, yesterday, Sam, they dropped the announcement of what's going on in 2026 for Magic, basically across all events. We got information on what's kind of sets we're going to be seeing. We got information on the Spotlight series. What piqued your interest from the announcement yesterday?
I think the thing that got me the most excited was that the pro tour for the Marvel set that is coming next summer, the top eight, it's going to be a normal pro tour, like three rounds limited each day and then cut to top eight. But the top eight is not constructed. The top eight is going to be a draft, which is crazy. That hasn't happened since 2010 is what I read.
I'm like shocked.
Yeah,
what I'm just so curious what is behind this. Like, why did they decide to do it? Are they just testing this out for one pro tour and then maybe they'll do it more? Like, I'm thrilled to see this, to see limited on that. Like, I mean, it's always on the main stage, but I do feel like limited is given less weight. I mean, it's given less weight in the actual factual tournament that it's, you know, six rounds of limited versus 10 rounds of constructed before cut to top eight, which is also constructed. But this is just wild to me. I never thought we would see something like this again.
I didn't either. I think part of it is probably that they really want to promote the Marvel set. And having the top eight, like the most important part of the event, be literally all Marvel cards is probably part of it. It inspires a lot of confidence about that draft format, too. I do know it's being led by Dave Humphreys, the design for that set. So Humphreys sets are usually bangers. Like we had, he did like Kamigawa Neon Dynasty and Kaldheim and War of the Spark. I'm very excited to watch. I will not be participating. I will not have a shot to participate.
Well, who knows? You might have a chance. Yeah. Well, and one of the ways you might have a chance, I guess maybe not quite for how those are seated, but one of the things they announced was that the Spotlight series happening in Las Vegas next summer in June is also going to be team limited, which is incredible. Awesome. And as soon as I saw the date for the end of June, I took a screenshot of it and I sent it to Ben and I said, is this your wedding weekend? And he said, yeah, but don't worry, we can move it. So unfortunately, Ben and I will not be able to attend the team draft or the team limited spotlight series, but hopefully it's well attended and they decide they're going to do more of those in the future because, oh my gosh, team limited events are amazing. The other thing they announced was seven sets. So we've got two, or what, we have three returning or three, you know, regular sets in terms of like Magic Universe. There's the Return to Lorwyn, et cetera. But then we've got The Hobbit, we've got Star Trek, we've got Marvel confirmed, and then a fourth unnamed Universes Beyond set.
Yeah. I don't really know why there's seven. I have a theory that, because, you know, they had to bump up the Spider-Man set into standard and make it draftable. So I think that was the Spider-Man set was kind of intended to be, I mean, through the Omen Paths was intended to be kind of like a non-tentpole release. And I wonder if them turning that into a major release sort of shifted their release schedule around. And that's why they have seven sets next year. I don't know. It's gonna be a lot.
That is a lot.
I wouldn't be surprised if that unannounced one is like another small set.
Right. That was why I saw some speculation about that. But do we think it's like small set, like non-draftable small set, or do you think it's going to be small set run back pick two?
I think they would run back pick two, which I'm not thrilled with, but as the seventh set of the year, I think that's totally fine.
As a podcaster, how do you feel about seven sets next year?
I had a very stressful week this week getting my podcast out because of the time crunch just on release week. So having release week time crunches, I'm not a huge fan of, but I think it'll be fine.
Well, I guess let's use that as a segue back to talking about Omen Paths / Spider-Man. And let's return to the question you asked me before we started recording, which is, are you enjoying this set? And I said, is it okay if I say yes, was my first response. Because what I'm feeling, not really from... Like I said, I'm not quite as tuned in to like, you know, other streams and YouTube channels this week as I might normally be. But even just friends of mine who play Magic are sort of tapping out for this set. We've got a lot of that. And I will say, YouTube comments, be kind. People going to Twitch streams, be kind. Like, it's not the best to like go to someone making content and be like, I'm not playing Magic for the next 2 months. You're like, cool. Well, I am, and I will be talking about these cards. And like, it's cool if you're not going to, but that kind of contribution isn't the most fruitful. But so what I'll say is that we're seeing a lot of people tapping out. And that's what I meant before we started recording, or at the beginning of the episode, when I said it's probably the most divisive set we've seen, in that I think a lot of people are up in arms about the small set nature of it. And in those people's defense, I think this set has been pretty botched in terms of its introduction to the community, right? The confusion about, we've got a Pro Tour this weekend, but that's not the draftable set. Oh, it's a smaller set. You're drafting it here. How are we drafting it at RCQs? What's happening in terms of the sealed format? Like, all of that stuff is confusing. Why do we have pick two draft in 8-person pods on Arena and best of three? It just all seems quite confusing. But in terms of the actual draft and play experience, I've been enjoying it this week, I will say. I mean, I don't know if that's a good metric, because I can't remember the last time, by whatever, Saturday from a Tuesday release, I wasn't enjoying myself with a new set. But I will say I still feel how I felt last week, which is that the puzzle of pick two is kind of fun, and these cards and archetypes are fun so far for me. And then we'll get to some maybe hidden gem stuff. So that's my take. I'll throw the question back to you, Sam. Are you enjoying this set?
I echo your thoughts. I have not disliked it. I don't think it's going to win any awards. I don't think people are going to be excited to draft it for nearly as long as other sets, but mm-hmm. it's new cards. I do think the mechanics are quite fun. I think mm-hmm. InWeb is really cool. I think yes. Mayhem is playing with Madness in general is just, I think, really fun. It's fun to like cook with that. A lot of the rares I think are fun. There's like a lot of fun, like sideways. We'll get to enemy color pairs. I think like throwing in really strong enemy colored rares to the set mm-hmm. adds a little bit of depth. I haven't really been enjoying the drafts. So I think the first like two pairs in pick two are really interesting, but I've had so many drafts where you just get into a lane and then you just don't make a decision for like 2.5 packs. Like I just take the cards that are on color and just, we'll get to deck building too. I know you have a point about the deck building being really mm-hmm. interesting, which I think, but I found the gameplay to be quite fun. Part of that is I love playing like blue, white tempo flyers decks. And I think that the blue, white deck is really strong. Mm-hmm. And I feel like we don't really get that archetype too often. We haven't gotten that archetype very often in the past couple sets. So it's been really fun to lean into that and get people with flyers. So yeah, I think the set is like fine. I'm planning to do, you know, 20 to 30 drafts of this set. I don't know how many I have now. Maybe more, because the things are like the drafts are so short.
Right.
But yeah, new cards are pretty fun. I think the mechanics are cool. I think the set like works for what it is.
Yes, that's my take largely as well. But I would also like to take, I feel like blue-white, I need to stand up for blue-white in Edge of Eternities as a great tempo aggro deck, the double spell deck.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But that wasn't like a flyers deck.
Correct.
Like you weren't really leaning on like bounce spells and stuff like that.
Yeah. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. October 10th is World Mental Health Day, and this year we're saying thank you, therapists. My therapist has helped me in many ways. I think I had a preconceived notion about what therapy was like I tell you my problems I'm having and you give me the tools to solve them or whatever. And in a way that's true, but it's so much more about noticing when I'm being reactive or when I'm doing something voluntarily versus doing something to manage anxiety or when I'm over-functioning in a relationship. And she puts all of that under the lens of it's information, which has been really eye-opening for me as a way of looking at things. The right therapist can change everything, and BetterHelp has 12 plus years experience in matching people to the right therapist. This World Mental Health Day, we're celebrating the therapists who have helped millions of people take a step forward. If you're ready to find the right therapist for you, BetterHelp can help you start the journey. Our listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/lords. That's betterhelp, H-E-L-P.com/lords. And now back to the show. So I think we'll kick things off with a couple of draft logs and then get into some format updates. Though I'm not, as a sort of blanket statement, not a lot of updates for me in terms of things I would like want to walk back or things I feel like we left out in the past couple weeks. I'm still on the same trajectory as I was after early access and pre-release. So I'm gonna take you through a draft log here. Sam, we'll probably only go through, you know, the first handful of pairs. Though I did find, this is a rare case where I found pack one, pick one, maybe not a rare case, but I thought pack one, pick one, there were a lot of options. My timer was ticking down. So cards I want to shout out here in pack one, pair one. In the commons, there's a Wonderweave Aerialist. The Azorius hybrid 2/2 ward 2 has flying as long as it's modified. I still haven't gotten the dream curve of I forget the name of it, but the white one drop 0/2. Yeah.
Zora Spider Fancier.
Right, yeah, Aunt May. I'm like, I can't say Aunt May. It's Zora into Aerialist on 2, and it's an immediate 3/3, and you gain a life. But that's sweet. So we got Aerialist. We've got Zan Tunnel Web Explorer 4 and a green 4/3 with in web 2 and a green, and when it enters, search your library for a basic land, put it onto the battlefield, tap, then shuffle. Spectacular Tactics, 1 and a white, choose 1, put a counter on target creature you control. It gains hexproof until end of turn, or destroy target creature with power 4 or greater. Moving on to the uncommons, there's a Kuminosu, the Watchful. That's 3 white-blue for a 4/4 Vigi. When it enters, you put a counter on something, and whenever a modified creature you control deals combat damage to a player, draw a card. There's Terrific Team Up, 3 and a green instant, costs 2 less to cast if you control a permanent with MV4 or greater, and 1 or 2 creatures you control each get +1/+0 until end of turn, and they each then punch a creature your opponent controls. And the rare in the pack is Gloria the Great Armorer. This is one of those aforementioned enemy color pair cards. 1 red-white for a 3/3. Whenever you attack, you put a +1/+1 counter on target attacking creature. And whenever a modified creature you control deals combat damage to a player, exile the top card of your library. You may play that card this turn. Heck of a pack. What are you thinking when you look at this pack? Like, what feels like the decision trees?
This pack's really strong. This is like one of the strongest for a pack that only is one rare. I think this pack is very, very strong.
Right.
So I think the best card in the pack is Gloria, the red white card. I think that's clearly the best card in the pack, but there's a lot of tension because it's an enemy colored card and enemy colored decks are not supported. So you basically have to splash this card, which I don't think is that big a deal. Like the fixing's really good in this set. So I would look to play Gloria, look to pick Gloria. And the question is, what do you pair with it? And I think the options are, there's the white card, Spectacular Tactics, which I think is one of the best commons in the set. I think this card's really strong. And then you could also, that's kind of the most natural fit because it's a white card. It shares a color with your gold card. The other options to me are Terrific Team Up, I think is a very, very strong removal spell. And I think that it fits well with white and red in Gloria because green like abuts both of those colors in the allied color pairs. So I think this would naturally, like, you can end up green, white or green, red and still splash Gloria. I think in a vacuum, Team Up is the second best card in the pack behind Gloria. I think I would take Gloria and Spectacular Tactics. I think the next card down is probably what you have selected, which is Kuminosu. And that to me is like you're locking into blue-white. You don't want to send blue-white signals, and that gives you still an out to splash Gloria. And I do think that snapping up gold cards early to avoid sending signals is actually a lot more relevant in this set than sets in recent memory, because the signals are just so clear in pick two.
Yeah, that was something that Ben was talking about, alluding to last week, and I wasn't quite like, it was one of those points where I was like, you sound confident, so I'm gonna like agree with you here, but I haven't quite wrapped my head around what you're saying. And now this week I really do. I just feel a slightly more incentivized, or maybe even more than slightly more incentivized to take gold cards or to be worried about the signals that I'm sending, because you see those ripple effects so much quicker. In fact, you see them twice as quick when you're doing these 4-person drafts. Yeah, I really thought about, I went through a lot of those thought processes, and I guess We'll talk about red a little later in the episode, but you know, there are two good red creatures in this pack. There is Lavaborn Goblins, the 4 and a red, 5/4 haste with Mayhem 2 and a red, and its younger brother, the common sadistic string puller, 3 and a red, 4/3 with Mayhem for 1 and a red. But I think those cards are just weaker than the other cards we shouted out. And two, I really don't want to get base red, even though I think Gloria is the best card in the pack. And so I am thinking about, like, you know, all the things you were saying about, like, I'd like to be, you know, if I'm thinking about one of those two colors, I'll think about Spectacular Tactics. I was thinking about Team Up. I was thinking about Zan because of the same thing of it bridges the gap between red and white, but is already a thing that will help me splash. But yes, I ultimately landed on Gloria and Kuminosu and was like, maybe I'll go like hard in the modified paint here. And this pack is good enough that it's not crazy to think that Wonderweave Aerialist could wheel, because it's a card that I know you're extremely high on. I'm not quite as high on it, but I like it a lot. And I think it's in that in a tier I would put of cards that I think are underrated by the community at large right now. It's a card that I see a little later than I think it should go.
And I think the other thing, I am talking myself into taking Kuminosu along with Gloria, because I think that if you take Spectacular Tactics Gloria, you pass a really clear Kuminosu Wonderweave Aerialist pair to your left. Mm. And you're also like the other obvious pair is Terrific Team Up and Zan.
Right.
So like, you know, like you're pretty sure that someone's going to take Terrific Team Up and Zan. Someone's going to take Kuminosu Wonderweave Aerialist. And if you're taking two white cards and passing a green signal and a blue white signal, that's going to, like, if you hook up people to your left in green, white and blue, white, you're kind of cutting yourself out of the option of either of the good white decks in this format.
Right. And I guess that is something to consider here, is that even though Gloria is the best card in the pack, I do think there's something to be said for just taking Terrific Team Up and Zan, because like it's monocolor, they're extremely strong. It cuts green out of this pack very clearly. I mean, there's a Perilous Lunge, but as we'll talk about later, I think that card is pretty bad. I think that like that was also a consideration for me. But I ultimately was just like, I really want to play with Gloria. I get two cards that like care about modified creatures very hard. I set myself up early knowing that I have to splash. And I think if you know early enough in the format that you have to splash or that you want to splash, that you can find the fixing at pretty low cost to your draft.
Agree.
Okay, so Gloria and Kuminosu in pack one, pick two. Following cards as options. There is a university campus if you want to take your fixing this early. That's the blue-white surveil land. There's a Deathflame Burst, the 2 and a red deal 4 with Mayhem 1 and a red. There's an Unstable Experiment, 1 and a blue. Target player draws a card, then up to 1 target creature you control connives. Mothwing Shroud, 2 and a white, exile something until this enchantment leaves the battlefield. Another Terrific Team Up. And a rare still in the pack is Stitcher's Wings, the 3 mana artifact equipment, equip cost of 2. Equipped creature gets +2/+0 and has flying and haste. And you can also cast it from your graveyard for a mayhem cost of 2. And it auto equips when you do that.
Yeah, I think Stitcher's Wings is really strong. I would definitely snap that one up. It's colorless. Mm-hmm. It's like kind of... It seems like it should be like a black red card because it has mayhem,
right?
But you know, if you're playing blue, you have Unstable Experiment and Mob Lookout to connive it away. And I think it's probably like 3 mana, equipped 2/+2/0 flying haste. Like flying haste is the real deal.
It's huge.
I think this card's I think this card's just strong enough on its own. Equipment that gives haste is, I think, a little underrated in limited in general. I think that's a good really take. Strong.
But also, lest we forget, not only do +1/+1 counters make your creatures modified, and equipment makes your creatures modified as well. So
that's
it's
right.
Like, it also works with both of the cards that we have so far.
And it and there's the blue-white hybrid uncommon that can tutor it, which is crazy.
Yes, good. Yes. Oh, I forget about that. I always think about that finding auras, but I never think about it with equipment because the equipment's not very good in the set. But yes, Stitcher's Wing's quite good. Okay, so you want to snap up Stitcher's Wings here?
Yeah, easily.
And what else?
I think you just take a white card So Mothwing Shroud. I think Terrific Team Up is just the best card in the pack, other than Stitcher's Wings. So, but like, you know, you have a red, white, and a blue, white card. You want to lock into blue, white. And Mothwing Shroud's also the only white card in this pack, which is not to say the player to your right took white cards. Like, it could just have been the only white card in the pack. So I think cutting off the signal to white matters here as well. And like, Mothwing Shroud's a strong card. Like, it's not like you're stooping to take it.
No, not at all. Yes, those are the two I landed on as well. Pack one, pair three. Some slight alarm bells might be going off as there are no white cards in the pack, right? So we saw Shroud and took it as the only white card in the last pack, and now no white cards here. The best card in the pack, I think, is Unstable Experiment, the one in a blue draw card, then a creature you control connives. There's also another Lavaborn Goblins, the 4 and a red, 5/4 haste with mayhem, 2 and a red. I guess there's a Mob Lookout, the Dimir Hybrid 03, when it enters target creature you control connives. I don't know, there's a Krobel Envoy of the Bog, 4 and a black, 4/4 menace. Whenever a creature you control attacks alone, you put a counter on it, then surveil X, where X is the number of counters on it. But like, I don't think you're deviating that far from the current path, but I am a little nervous here.
Yeah, so I see you selected Goblins and Unstable Experiment. I'd love to hear why you picked Goblins. Like, are you looking to go into red white from this position?
So basically what I was thinking, I remembered that there was the Goblins and the 4/3 with mayhem, 1 and a red from pack one, for my pack one. And I know both of those cards, like, you can be in pods where those cards wheel. Like, people, I think red is pretty much agreed upon as the worst color in the set, and you can get those cards kind of late. If people aren't, and certainly if you know, you're the only red drafter at the table, you're going to get them. And so I was basically thinking, like, okay, well, the person to my right passed Stitcher's Wings, which could mean, it could just mean that they don't think that card is as busted as I do. But I was also like, that feels like a mayhem signal. Unstable Experiment and Goblins together, like, is good in terms of like the draw discard stuff, having a mayhem card. If one of those other mayhem cards wheel, I might end up going like blue, red, splash, white instead of going whatever, white, blue, splash, red, if those cards wheel. I just felt like it was the highest upside in terms of, if I take these cards, what do I think the final deck I might have looks like? And that's what I was thinking about.
That makes sense to me. I'm thinking about Krobel too. I've been pretty impressed with that card. It is a hero, not a villain. I just realized that, which is pretty awkward.
But it is awkward.
In terms of like the desire to like find the right lane in pick two rather than forge your own, I'm pretty tempted to take Unstable Experiment plus Krobel here.
Yeah.
For outs into blue black, which I think is a really good deck, especially if it's open. But I think the Lavaborn Goblin spec here also makes sense. I'm a little worried about like, if maybe someone to my left is trying to be in black red mayhem and not passing this goblin sort of steers them away from that, which would be like, if they do end up there, it would be beneficial for this like blue white start that we have.
Right.
But that might be just overthinking it. Not sure. Yeah, there's still like that is romantic rendezvous.
That's a layer I'm not quite at. Like, I know I should be. I'm like slightly aware of what I'm passing, but not so much to the point where I'm like trying to put each person at the table, or at least the persons on either side of me, in a specific color pair. But I should. I really liked what you were doing with the first pick of like, someone's going to take these two green cards, someone's going to take these two. Like, I think I should be thinking a bit more clearly about what I think the likely pairs of cards being snapped up out of the packs past what I take are. And especially when we have a pack like that first pack one, pick one, where the cards, there's lots of really good cards. You can kind of start to do that.
I might be overthinking this pick too, with like wanting to pass the god. Like, it might be like the bell curve meme where like the end of the thing is just like, just take the good card, like on both ends.
Well, except like, I think it's Unstable Experiment is the good card. And I don't think anything else clearly is. I don't hate taking Krobel. Krobel, I think just has to be, I think it has to just be a little bit better. Like, if there's a obviously if there's a Dimir signpost, even if it's just Carlo, I would take Experiment plus Carlo here. Yeah. And just like, and that is the kind of it's a very, I don't know if I like it, but it is the rules of engagement for sure, which is that like you, and we talked about this last week. I want to like double down on it this week. You just don't get to decide what you want to do at a draft table.
Yeah.
When I've been watching streamers this week, and especially on day one with some people that you know probably didn't do set reviews and are just diving in for the first time because they're very good limited players, that was the mistake I saw time after time, was people like having a couple good, like after pair two, having four good cards in a green white deck, and then pair three, there being like dregs for green white and clear blue black cards, and them taking the green white dregs.
Yeah.
I think that's like the biggest mistake you can make in this format. And I don't know if part of that isn't fun. It's not fun to like open a bomb and be like, I want to play with this card. And then the table goes, you can't, you have to be blue black. And you're like, okay, I guess I have to be blue black. Like it doesn't quite feel like a draft in that way. Do you know what I mean?
It feels like an exercise. Like yes. it feels like a you're like testing. It's a test of patience and discipline.
Right. Yeah. It's like, okay, you want to do this thing, but what you should do is this other thing. And so I think that's sort of what these picks are. Like,
yeah,
it's like, and I end up being able to be in the Jeskai space in this pack, like what I alluded to in pair five. Wonderweave Aerialist does wheel. And so I'm able to get into this Jeskai space pretty, like my mana's good. I have a dual land. I end up with two vibrant cityscapes. I'm basically just like full Jeskai. If you had to put it as, it's probably closer to blue, red, splash, white than it is blue, white, splash, red, but it's basically just a Jeskai deck. And I'm basically able to do that because blue is wide open. Like I get, you know, triple experiment, double snatchback, triple Wonderweave Aerialist. It's just very clearly what the seat was able to do.
You're just obviously the only blue drafter at the table.
Right.
Yeah.
Which, man, does that feel good? I know it does. It's half the time, but when you're one of the two people at the table that's like only drafting one of the colors, that feels good. Should we do one more draft log here?
Yeah, sure. This was one of mine. It did not go so well. but I there are a couple key points. So pack one, pick one, you see the following cards as options. There is a Wonderweave Aerialist, the blue-white hybrid common. There's Favored Fighter, 3 and a green, 4/4 at common. When this creature enters, create a treasure token, and it can't be blocked by more than one creature. There is Snatchback, the Into the Royal variant. And then your rare is Remarkable Readings, which is 3 and a white, enchant land. When it enters, create 3 1/1 green and white human citizen tokens. And the enchanted land has one tap. Target creature gets 1/1 until end of turn. For each creature you control, activate only as a sorcery.
Remarkable Readings. I mean, it's in the text. It is remarkable. This card is.
Yeah.
It's busted and is so hard to interact with. Like, you just are not really packing a lot of main deck enchantment removal. And even if you are, they have 3/1s for their troubles. Like, it's a very, very good card. So
it's tutorable off the uncommon again, yes. Which comes up a lot.
that's really, really sick. So you're clearly taking Remarkable Readings. It's just about what you're pairing that with.
Yeah. And there is a principled referee in the common slot that I didn't shout out. That's 3 and a white, 2/3. When it enters, you choose one, either distribute 2 counters among creatures you control, different creatures, or return target creature card with mana value 2 or less from your graveyard to your hand. I think that should be in conversation with Remarkable Readings. I selected the Aerialist to pair with it, which I'm not sure is correct. I think I probably should have just taken 2 white cards, because there's no other white cards other than Aerialist in the pack also. So you're kind of cutting off white to some degree.
Nah. So I'll quote you back to yourself here, because this earlier this week, I took a screenshot of my 17 lands of like, I had 4 trophies in a row. I sent it to both you and Ben, and I said, format solved. And you both replied with the same thing, which was that, is the solution to just take the good cards? And that is the solution, I think. There's more to it than that. But like, you really do want to just take the good cards. I think Wonderweave Aerialist is enough of a white card that, like, I know it's an Azorius card. You could play it in white green.
Yeah.
And you also, like, there's only largely, I know we'll talk about enemy color pairs, but you're largely only playing white cards in two decks. You're not playing white cards in four different decks.
Right.
So taking Wonder Weaver list is not so committing. I think it's like, I would be considering, I guess really the only other card I would consider, you shouted it out, is Favored Fighter, but I would take Favored Fighter over Principled Referee.
Mm-hmm.
Even pairing with Remarkable Readings for a similar thing. It's just like, I might end up white green. Also, Remarkable Readings is eminently splashable, and Favored Fighter helps me do that if I happen to end up in green red. I don't think Principled Referee is in the conversation here, but maybe I'm too low on the card. I don't know.
I like that card a lot. The other thing I was thinking about is I don't really want to start with 2/4 drops.
Yes.
Which matters as well.
Yeah. I wanted to not like the Wonderweave Aerialist pick out of this pack, but I think the more I look at the pack, the more I think that that's just what you're supposed to take.
Yeah. Pack one, pair two. The following cards as options, a much weaker pack. There's a Shock as a red card that you could take. There's Phantasmal Vision.
You would be allowed legally to take a red card, yes.
Phantasmal Vision, which is 1 and a blue, 1/3 at common. Flying Vigilance, whenever this creature attacks, mill a card. It's also a villain. Mm. There's also Basil, Cabaretti Loudmouth at uncommon. 1 and a white, 2/2 flash. When it enters, choose one or both. Tap a creature or untap a creature. There's a rare, which is Lava Brink Repels the Magma Loth, which is a 5-mana red saga that I have no read on whether it's good or not. But considering we took 2 white cards to start, I don't think it's really worth taking.
No, it's funny to me that you read, there's a third red card, which I think is like clearly better than those other two, the Kazoo Ruthless Rival, but like, we're not taking, I don't think you're taking a red card here. Yeah, no. This pack is really weak. I like the picks you made. Like, I would be happy to take like a black card and a red card here if I liked them. I would happily take a signpost if it was a good signpost. You know, this is a pack, this pack is weak enough, and again, I just am not interested in being married to my first picks at all in this format, but you have nothing else to take other than Basil, Cabaretti, and Phantasmal Vision. Like, there's not just, you can't really make an argument for anything, I don't think.
Just blue white 2 drops.
Yeah.
Okay. Then, the meat of this is pack one, pair three.
Yeah.
There is another Wonderweave Aerialist. There is an Unstable Experiment, which is 1 and a blue instant. Target player draws a card, then up to 1 target creature you control connives in blue. So you could continue your blue-white path with those two cards. There's also Zan Tunnelweb Explorer, which is the 5-mana 4/3 in green at common legend. When it enters, search your library for a basic land card, put it onto the battlefield, tapped and shuffle. It has in web for 2 and a green. And a green-white gold card, Janai and Hoppy Roof Skippers, green-white, 2/2, uncommon. During your turn, they have flying, and when they leave the battlefield, you make a 1/1 citizen token. So I took the Aerialist in the experiment, but looking back on this, if you see a gold card like this, I think you're just supposed to snap it up, especially in green-white, and especially considering we have really good white cards to start.
Well, or eight. And the fact that Zan is here, like,
yeah,
and spoiler, it doesn't end up working out. Like, if you had taken Janai and Hoppy and Zan, like, green is not open the rest of pack one. I think you actually see 0 green cards the rest of pack one. But like, I think this is an example of that kind of like, well, whatever, if the table wants me to do this, I'll do this. And I would take Janai and Zan here. And I was circling this point last week. And I feel like I didn't quite, because I was kind of starting to say, like, well, it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter, like, what you take early, because the table's going to tell you what to do. And sort of to this point, like, if you take Janai and Hoppy and Zan and green isn't open, it's not that big of a deal that you passed Aerialist and Unstable Experiment here. Because by virtue of green not being open, it means that blue is more likely to be open. And if blue is open for your seat, you will see more Aerialist and experiment type cards. It is kind of shocking that those two are in this pack and that green isn't open.
Yeah. Which makes me kind of believe that maybe just that's just a weird pack. Like pack one, the table just didn't open very many green cards. I don't really remember if there was a bunch of green towards the end of this draft, but I do regret not jumping into green here.
Yeah. Yeah. Really, really interesting. Okay. There's so much I want to talk about, and I feel like we've got some more stuff in our show notes to get to. We'll hop away from these draft logs and just get into some format updates here. I'll let you take the wheel to start. What are you feeling after week one?
Yeah, I think the big thing that I felt is that most of the color pairs just work. You just kind of take the good cards and play them. There's like a little nuance in some of the decks. Basically like green, white, blue, white, blue, black. You just take the good cards, play them, and the decks just work. I do think white, blue is best as like sort of formulated as a tempo deck. So there's a little bit of nuance there. The problem child in this format is definitely red as a color. Mm-hmm. And it's just that the red cards are just kind of bad. Like I honestly believe that Leyline Weaver, which is the green-red hybrid common, it's one GR hybrid, 2/2 reach. And then it taps for green or red. And then anytime you cast a spell with mana value 4 or greater, you untap it. I think that that is the best red card below rare. And I think is better than most of the red rares as well. Excluding the gold cards. Like, I think some of the red gold cards are good. They're like fine. But honestly, like Leyline Weaver is so strong. And every other red card at common and uncommon is just like really mopey and just doesn't line up with what the format's about. And a lot of them, like the mayhem cards, like ask you to do work to make it the same rate as what green gets and what white gets. So I really don't, do you feel the same way about the red cards?
I do. I think I'd like red like maybe a half a notch more than you, it sounds like. But I mostly agree with you. Like, I'm not hoping to not draft red, but I was saying this last week that like the red black mayhem deck has felt like I'll draft it if that's what I have to do.
Yeah.
But it has felt tough to me. It's felt tough to like get a critical mass of both ways to discard and the cards with mayhem. And then even if you have that critical mass, you have to draw those cards in the right or like, you know, ratio to each other. And red green just like has not been a deck as far as I've seen. Yeah. Like I haven't really faced red green. I don't think I've really drafted red green. And if I have, it's like red green splash. Like I'm like basically base green and then the good red cards that I see and then whatever other cards I want to splash. So red just has been kind of a non-player in the format because of what you're saying. Like the card quality is just so low. We should shout out, you have it on the list here, but Restless Razorkin is a really strong card. That's the 2 in a red, 3/3 trample. When you cast something with MV4, you exile a card and you can play that until you exile another card this way. Like that's a really good card. Very, again, the problem is that it's single pipped and very splashable. And so people can snap that up from you.
I think Lavaborn Goblins, the 5/4 haste with mayhem for 3. I think that card's pretty strong as well. Mm-hmm. The two red removal spells, Deathflame Burst, which is the 3-mana deal 4 with mayhem and shock, they're like fine. But I really think just it lags so far behind the other colors. And that's not to say that I'm hard avoiding it. I have trophied with black red and it felt pretty good. And I think both of the black, red, gold cards, even the 5-mana 3/3, that card felt fine to me. It felt pretty good. Like if the table dictates you should be in black, red, and maybe you have some of the black rares, which black has a lot of great rares, I think you can build a fine black, red deck and do well. But it's not something that I'm aiming to get into.
No, not at all. Yeah, I think red has a serious power level problem. And I mean, you put Deathflame Burst and Shock in the same sentence, in the same parentheses here. I think Deathflame Burst is good. I think Shock is not good. Mm. Like Deathflame Burst, I would put it C+ in the format, and Shock, I would put it C-, D+. Like it's funny that Shock does kill Leyline Weaver, and it kills some rares maybe, but a lot of stuff gets is already out of range or gets out of range thanks to modified being a part of the set.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Like, it's so embarrassing to have shock in your hand against Leyline, or not, Wonderweave Aerialist, the Ward 2. Like, it's horrible. Like, you can't kill it until turn 3, and by that point, they could modify it.
Correct. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's not great. And where I think Ben and I were pretty down on, I forget what it's called, but the one in a black, -3/-3. I think we were kind of lumping that in with shock. That card is quite a bit better just because of the combat trick part of it. I mean, obviously, three is a lot more, killing three toughness is a lot more than killing two toughness in this format as well. But I also think the fact that the -3/-3 can be combat trick adjacent when it's not killing the thing is also helpful.
Yeah. And I think the other issue with red is its two decks are so disparate. Like, Black Red Mayhem and green. I think a lot of the red cards lend themselves pretty well to like a mid-range Mayhem game plan, but like Deathflame Burst is not good in green red. Like the sadistic string puller is really bad in green red. Like, none of the red cards actually do anything for the green red deck, which makes me really hesitant to get into green red for anything outside of uncommons. And we're going to talk about green, black, and enemy colors later. I think that is what you should be thinking of as the other green deck in the format. Aside from green white, is like playing like a multicolor, like mid-range pile.
Yeah. Well, and to that, like green red and red black not playing well, it's that I think I can't imagine a green red deck that is base red.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, like, yeah. So much of what green red is trying to do is like favored fighters and, you know, like just putting chonk on the battlefield, and green has, and so much of what red can provide is mayhem, and green doesn't interact in the mayhem space at all. And so you would have to have some kind of like self-contained red discard synergies, which don't really exist. And so all of red's best cards fit with mayhem, which is red black, and even that you're probably more base black than you are base red. Agreed. I have also messed around in the Grixis space, and as we saw, I messed around in being sort of like blue red splash white, and we've been alluding to this, but we are going to talk enemy colors. But before that, I do want to talk about just a handful of individual cards. Slash, Ben's not here, Sam, so we can talk about the data. We can use the D word. And he can't say boo. And so I've not been checking it. And the returns on the data are a lot lower, with, I think, people playing this set a lot less than they normally would. But there are still some surprises to me. And chief among them is a card that I like, but not as much as the data would suggest, which is Phantasmal Vision, the 1/1/3 flying Vigi, 1/1 mill a card. Why is this performing so well, do you think?
It's the number one blue common, right, by Game in Hand?
Yeah.
It's wild to me too. I would not have predicted that ever. I kind of liked this card going in. I do kind of believe it. Like, I think that one thing that can put cheap creatures like ones and twos over the edge is if they have a type, and that type is valuable. And Phantasmal Vision is a villain. So I think that like having a cheap 2-drop villain is really important for the blue black deck. And I also think, like I mentioned on my podcast this week, talking about blue white, I think that having a cheap evasive threat for the modified deck is really important, especially one with vigilance that can like prevent your opponent from racing you back. But it's weird because like the mill a card is irrelevant for blue white. And that seems like the most important part of this card. So I was very surprised to see it performing as well as it did, considering that I didn't really consider it as a key to the blue white deck going in.
Well, and certainly in blue black, which just might be where I would think it's at its best because of types mattering and it being a villain, and that's where villains matter. It's like you go through your deck in blue black. Like, I have had multiple games where I'm like, well, Phantasmal Vision now has Defender because I have 8 cards in my library and I need them all there so that I can have enough turns to try and win this game. I mean, it does wear counters incredibly well. Like, one counter on this 2/4 flying vigilance is not even a brick wall. I mean, it's a flying wall. Like, it's really hard to punch through. But it doesn't even, like, prevent, like, it's good in the way that, like, you know, I was talking, trying to sell Ben last week on Mob Lookout, the Demir 03 Connive, which I still like. I'm going to say, I still like, when you can turn that into turn four, it's 2 mana, 1/4, 2 mana, 1/4 of stats, draw a card, essentially, if you're pitching a thing with Mayhem that you cast, I think it's good. But the thing about those high toughness, low power creatures is they don't really stop in web.
Yeah.
Because your opponent can still attack with their 2/2 into this. You snap off the block because that's what you should be doing in this format, is snapping off blocks. But then they still get to in web because you can't kill the creature. I don't know. It's a card I like, but when I look at this, and I'm pulling this up by overall, you talked about it as the top blue common. It's the third best common behind the white removal spells when you sort by game and hand win rate. It's shocking to me.
That's wild to me because blue isn't even doing that well in the data. Like, the data is definitely skewed towards green and white.
Yeah. So
I do believe that it is a good card. I think it's probably a little overrepresented in the data for some reason, but I do like it. I think 2-drop with types, and it works in the blue-white deck as well. Like, I don't know. I'm not taking it as the best blue common, but I might be wrong. But I also think, like, if you're in those decks, you're going to get it. I don't think you need to prioritize it.
Right. Well, and we should talk about the reverse of this is Snatchback not performing well. This is the one in a blue bounce spell with kicker, one in a blue, which I do still have for myself as the top blue common. I have liked this card. This card has done very well for me in my decks, and I am not sure why, especially with the blue counterspell is performing well, the Drix Interception.
Yeah.
The cancel plus you can tap up to 2 things, like, those play so well when you get to pass with 4 mana up.
I agree. I also still take Snatchback, like, it's the best blue common. I was gonna say that I wonder if, like, the data has a penalty for Snatchback because it's double pipped if you're trying to draw a card, and maybe people are trying to draw a card more often than they should. But then also, like you said, Drix Interception's performing really well as well, which is the one blue counter spell. So that card is a surprise to me as well. Like, I thought that card was going to be fine, but it's doing very, very well. So I think there's something about what the aggregate blue, what the data is trying to tell us in the aggregate about blue cards that we're not quite seeing.
Yeah. Which is interesting because I think this was, like, one of my guesses about the format. One of my format truths was that I thought the decks were going to look pretty samey because of the small set nature. I feel like last week Ben pushed back against that a little bit. But I think that's sort of where I stand still in terms of the decks, because of that, the point that you originally made of the colors, like, two people at each table will be the only people drafting one color. And so two of the people at the table are going to have, like, 30 plus playables at the end of the draft. And so it's really important to, like, I think deck building is honestly, like, the draft kind of gets on rails. Deck building is where a lot of, like, tough decisions come into play, because you have to make some pretty hard cuts, I've found, when your decks are open.
I agree. And I also think there is some deck variety based on which color you have more of. Like, like, if you're the only white drafter at a table, which honestly is pretty unlikely at this point, that's going to look like your blue-white deck is going to look a lot different than the blue-white deck you build if you were the only blue drafter at the table. Like, If you're heavy base blue, you're probably going to lean more into Snatchback or Drix Interception and be, like, less excited to play your City Pigeons on turn one because you want to run more islands than planes, etc.
Yeah. Yeah. So my takeaway is basically I'm going to keep playing Snatchback. Maybe I need to bump it down in my pick order because, like, I don't need to consider it a signal. It wheels sometimes.
Right.
But Phantasmal Vision, my curiosity is piqued, and I'm going to keep trying to play with that card a bit more. And because it's been good, but like I said, is it top three commons good? That's surprising to me.
Yeah.
Okay. Perilous Lunge, the 2 and a green sorcery, put a counter on something. It fights target creature and opponent controls. I think this card is pretty bad. And I'm not saying it because I think it's like performing very well or something, but like just as a cautionary tale, I would encourage folks to like not take this very highly. And I'm basically at a cap of one. Like, I'll play one of these if I feel like I have to for interaction's sake, but I'm definitely never playing more than one. And I just think this card is pretty poorly positioned in the format.
Yeah, I think this is like a class of card that has gotten a lot weaker over the past few years of Limited. Like, mm-hmm. Hunt the Weak style, expensive fight spells, I think just aren't what they used to be. Like, the best green interaction that we see is stuff like one mana, put a counter on something, fight, like the one from Bloomburrow that you could gift, or the two mana, like instant speed punch spells usually perform pretty well as well. Mm-hmm. I think the more expensive ones just don't really cut it anymore.
Yeah, expensive, it's sorcery speed and fight not bite is all just like bad, bad, bad.
Yeah, it's still like fine to play if you need it, but I also think like your green-white deck, white gives you so much better interaction than green there. And then if you're green-red, I think that's probably where you play this, but then you're green-red. And I think in that case, you can splash like Damning Caress or like the black removal spells, and that's going to perform better.
Similarly, Hidden Mundanity is a card that I've like theory crafted about, and I'm always like, is Unable to Scream, are we back? And this is the one in a blue enchantment. The creature becomes a citizen with base power and toughness 1/1 and has defender and loses all other abilities. And I think there's just too many ways to get around this card. You can still crew a vehicle with this or tap it with Basil and then inweb it back to your hand. You can bounce the creature back to your hand with Snatchback, or bounce the aura off. Like, I just think this card is bad. You can also just still add counters to the creature, and then it's a 3/3 blocker, you know, like there's just too much, I think, to make this card good. And I haven't played this myself. I have seen it cast against me a lot, and I think it's a pretty bad card.
I'll play a copy if I have the hybrid white blue uncommon as a tutor target, but you know,
we keep referencing it. We should probably say that card's name, which is, I think it's
Serena Bargain Spinner, I think.
Serena Bargain Spinner. That's a 3 Azorius hybrid. It's a 3/2. It has flying on your turn, and when it enters, you search for an equipment or enchantment or aura, rather, equipment or aura from your library and put it into your hand. I guess if you have that, you might play Hidden Mundanity, but that feels like playing, I don't know. But you don't want to just play that. Like, you're not just playing Serena and Hyde as your only target, right?
I might. I think I have. Serena, like, if you're all in on modified, I think that it's like a flyer on your turn. It's like okay to do that, I think.
Okay. Merciless Enforcers, the one in a black, 2/1 lifelink, pay 3 in a black, deal a damage to each opponent. It's also a villain. Where are we at? This card is a constant surprise to me. It feels like a big overperformer every time I see it.
I like it. I don't, there's really not that many tokens running around that I can remember. So I think 2/1 here doesn't matter as much as it does in other sets. Also, this is another cheap card with types. So I think that just really matters for two, like that's really what can push a 2-drop over the edge is having a relevant type.
Yeah. Well, and also that, like, I mean, not that I feel like there are a lot of board stalls in this format, but having this activated ability late in the game is no joke.
Yeah, I've run into that as well. Kind of like, it reminds me of Ill-Gotten Inheritance, where they have to like think about their life total as if it's like, if you have 8 mana, they have to do their turn not as if they're like 2 life less, but 4 life less, because you can do activate, untap, double activate. And that like can change the math without you even having to activate it.
Yeah. Or any individual cards you want to shout out here?
I just want to shout out Leyline Weaver. I think this is one of the best commons in the set. This is the green red hybrid that we mentioned earlier that adds mana. It has reach and it untaps whenever you cast a spell with mana value 4 or greater. In the black red mayhem deck I trophied with, this was an all-star. I think this card's so key to both every green deck. Like it enables in web, but also like getting a discount on your sadistic string puller. like the mayhem discount and then untapping this, and then you can get 2 mana out of it a turn. I've gotten 3 mana out of it in a turn before.
Whoa.
The curve of Leyline Weaver into the favored fighter on turn 3, untap the Leyline Weaver, slam another 2-drop is so strong. I love this card. I think it's crazy that it's hybrid.
This would be my pick for top common in the set.
Yeah, I think I'm there too. Yeah.
Yeah. I think power level wise for sure, but then it being hybrid just pushes it over the top. Like, it's hybrid and itself splashes. So you can be red black and splash a green card. You can be, green red or you can be green white and splash a red card with it. Like, it's just so good.
Yeah.
All right. Going to take us into, I maybe thought at a point this was going to be our main topic, but it is still week one. So we've got a lot to talk about, but I did want to talk about enemy color pairs in the set. I had seen Neo Mark, who is the Corticall's set review partner, posting some stuff on social media about some enemy color pair trophies. This was pretty early, like maybe it was even from early access, but also day one, day two. And then I started to find myself in the space. I've played a black green deck. I've played a white black deck. The draft log we did, I would call that a blue red deck, though it's really just a Jeskai deck. But and Mark posted a black green trophy, a blue green trophy. I've gotten into enemy color pairs. I maybe have now started to swing the pendulum a little bit more because it makes me feel like a little smart to do it, and I've had less success when I am doing that. But that's neither here nor there. But I do think it's a real part of the format. Like, I don't think this is just me being like goofy. Like, it was in, I don't know, 10, 12 drafts this week that I had already done enemy color pair decks, 3 times. And I think there are, and people are often like, how did you get into this? I think sometimes just as you talked about, there's good gold rares that are in the enemy colored pairs, and you can get into it that way by opening that up. But sometimes you just don't see either a critical mass of gold cards, or you don't see the good gold cards in the first couple packs. And if you don't see them until pack 3, you kind of have to have decided what you're doing by then.
Yeah.
And there are times where you're just taking, like, I took these 2 good green cards in this pack. Oh, I took these 2 good black cards in this pack. There's a green removal spell. There's a black removal spell. And you're not seeing any hybrid card, or you're not seeing any gold cards that are pulling you into one of the allied color pairs. And then you just find yourself in the middle of pack 2 with, like, oh, I have 13, the 13 playables I want to play are in green and black. And maybe I've got, some stuff I want to splash in red or whatever, but you're at its core an enemy color pair deck. And I don't think that's that crazy to come up, 1 in 5 drafts, 1 in 10 drafts.
Yeah, I think also just the scenarios where you hit the 50% of being the only one in your color in a certain color. If you get like 25 cards of one color, like, you can pair that with basically anything you want. And sometimes the things that you want are, like, maybe you have like 20 black cards and you open the white enchantment rare that we talked about, or one of the 2 busted black white rares, and you're just like, okay, I'll just take good white cards and round it out and play black white.
Right. Yeah. So I guess, like, I don't have any sort of like big thoughts about this, and they're probably not all created equal. Like, I do think black gets like a good bit of it because, like, the black white rares, as you said, are pretty busted. The green black rare is really good. Green black, I think, as a home especially, is good because you get green, which can easily splash. And I will say, talking about this blue-red deck that was basically Jeskai, the white-black deck I had was probably the closest to actually just enemy-colored. Like, I would have not splashed if I had I splashed one blue card. I would have not done that if there was, like, another card I liked better in my 2 colors. And then the black-green deck was also, like, a pretty aggressive red splash, but clearly black-green. So you'll probably splash in these enemy color paired decks to some sort of responsible nature, but at its core it is enemy color paired. And I just want to throw that out there as, like, this has happened to me enough in a small enough sample size or in a small enough number of drafts that I think it's more real than it is like niche or sort of off the beaten path. I think it's something that's going to come up a fair amount.
I think especially black green. I wrote a bunch of notes in black green. I know we're running a little bit long, and I was planning on talking about black green on my podcast next week.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Even though I have not, I haven't actually drafted it yet. But I have like, there's like a lot of black gets really, really good rares, like mono black rares. And there's enough like recursion and self mill in the black and green colors that doesn't really have a home elsewhere. That I think that black green is like a real thing that you can shoot for, kind of like I alluded to earlier, as like, this is the other green deck that's not green white rather than green red. Because I think also with Leyline Weaver, you just get to splash red for free, and you can splash the green red gold cards as well. Like even Zekau, the three red, red, green, green card, the 6/7 Vigilance Trample Haste, when he attacks, if you've cast a spell with mana value 4 or greater this turn, draw card. Like, I think you, even though that's a double red card, if you are in green black and have the Leyline Weavers and maybe a couple dual lands, like you could splash this pretty free.
Yeah, I splashed it in a green white deck yesterday fairly freely. Like I played a dual land or I played a mountain to search up with Zan. But then I also had like Weavers and a dual land. And so like I got there and the card was excellent. Like, so I was like, oh, this card's a beating, but I just never want to be green red. So yeah, I think that tracks for being a splash in green black as well.
The other like black card that I want to talk about is Eerie Gravestone for this type of deck. This is 2-mana common artifact. When it enters, draw card, and then you can pay 1 and a black, sack it to mill 4 cards, put a creature card from among them into your hand. At first I thought this was you could just get any creature out of your graveyard. Yeah. But needing to hit in 4 means you need to play like at least 15 creatures, maybe 14. And I find that like my blue-black decks aren't hitting that threshold. And I think black-red could, but like black-green is definitely the home where you can play enough creatures to actually have this trigger really reliably. And having a card that can dig you towards your black bombs like Luis or Hex of Undeath isn't creature, but like Luis or Wrench. This is like a card that can help you find those cards.
Yeah. Well, and to that point, like that sort of all that self-mill stuff and the like the creatures being really good in green, it's something that black wants to do that neither red nor blue really support, but green does in a big way, is that sort of like creature density thing. I do have a little quick story time about Eerie Gravestone, which is that I got to use it as an onboard trick with my, I don't even know what it's called, the Doc Ock common, the 4/5 hexproof gets to be an 8/8 when you have 8 or more cards in your graveyard, and my opponent like just didn't block. And I was like, okay, crack my gravestone. Now you're dead because you're taking 4 extra damage. So that's something to look out for. And maybe that's a more of a like, oh, then maybe blue black does want it type deal. But I agree with you. Gravestone is a card it's a card that one of the things I like about theory crafting about these enemy color pairs and is that gravestone is a card that you can get late.
Yeah.
Reliably get late. And then when you get to turn cards you reliably get late into like aces in your deck or just like really good value cards in your deck, that's a big level up.
I think Gravestone just on its own is a good card. Like it has a little bit of a deck building requirement, but it's basically think twice, you know, like
with selection on the back end. Yeah.
Yeah. Like it's a really strong card on its own. I just don't really think the decks really like want it.
No, the black decks don't really want it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a shame. But black has a lot of that, like, you know, Banemarked Lannan, the 3-mana 2/3 Death Touch that mills 2, or is it mill 3?
Mill 3.
Mill 2. Mill 2.
Oh, it's mill 2?
And then Scout the City, which is a card I don't love, but the 1 in a green, like, either kill a flyer or mill 3 and then put a permanent from among them into your hand. Like, and then it's got ways to get stuff back with Celestia Archivist, getting back something that's MV4 or greater, Prison Break, the Mayhem, Reanimate spell. There's just a lot of ways that those cards play together. It's so funny that you're like, I want to talk about black green. I theorycrafted about it, but like the nature of pick two is that you just can't like go in and force this.
I know. I'm just like patiently waiting for it to be open. That's kind of the thing with the enemy color pairs that I don't understand is like how you get into it. Like I'm going to, after this, go back and go through your draft logs on these enemy color pairs and like try to see like how you get there, because that's not really on my radar yet. Like it is now that I've kind of mapped out what green black wants to look like. But I find it hard to see that during the draft, and I'm still kind of chewing on how you get there from when I'm so locked into like, I need to find my two color lane.
Yeah. Yeah. I do think it's like having maybe an idea about what are the gold cards that you're like, oh yeah, I want to get into, or I'm not interested in passing this card because it's a signal, versus like, oh, well, that card just doesn't matter. Like, you know, I don't know, is seeing, we keep talking about it, but seeing Serena, like, are you trying to be like, ooh, Azorius is open? Like, I'm not, you know?
No, yeah, because it's hybrid, yeah.
Well, it's hybrid, but also it's like, you got to do a little bit of work for it. I don't know. Right, okay, that's right. not a great example, but like, I mean, even something the one white blue double strike unblockable. Like, are you just like, oh god, gotta take it?
Yeah, because I don't think that card's very strong. Even Carlo is a good example. The black blue black uncommon.
So I feel like there could be spots where you're like, I'm deep into blue, and then like you see that versus there's a Deathflame Burst, or that versus there's a Favored Fighter, and you're like, this is just a better card.
Yeah.
And yeah. I think you and Ben said it right when you said like the secret of the format is just take the good cards.
Yeah.
And like, and you're trying to take the good cards so that like either you take the good cards and you're maximizing those picks getting in your draft, or you're taking the good cards as the information to get you into what is open. And I feel like the way you get yourself into trouble in this format is by, I think the most thing is by going like, all right, I've got four cards in this deck, I'm locked in. And then you watch like the Nuts Demir deck pass you by. Yeah.
Which I don't been there.
Sam, thank you so much for coming on this week. Where can folks find your show? Give a little plug for all your content.
Yeah. My podcast is called Rough Drafts. And the idea is basically I look at the format through the lens of one card. So it's always like this week I talked about Wonderweave Aerialist. I went really in depth on how I think the blue-white deck comes together. You can find it basically anywhere you have podcasts. I have a YouTube channel where I upload the podcast there, and it's on like Spotify, all the podcast sites. I'm on Blue Sky if you want to reach out to me. It's sampratt.bsky.social. I'm in the Lords of Limited Discord, have been for years. If you want to reach out to me there as well.
Yeah. And you do stream sometimes, right? Very, very
yeah,
rarely.
Yeah. Very, just like kind of when I have a free night. It's not anything reliable. Like my Twitch username is SamP_MTG.
Yeah. It's so weird for me to introduce you as Sam, because in my head you are Samp, but, we'll go with your given name here. So yeah, thank you so much for joining me, this week and filling in for Ben, and thank you all for tuning in. We'll thank, DJ Salty Pretzels for the intro and outro music. Make sure you get a listen. You can check all of our content, Lords of Limited content, out on our website, lordsoflimited.com. I don't think we still, unfortunately, maybe we're skipping it this time, but you can usually find tier lists up there. Maybe I'll get crack the whip and Ben can get a tier list up for Omen Paths for us this week. But we've also got our episode backlogs, our YouTube and Twitch stream links, our merch, and of course our Patreon page at lordsoflimited.com. We've got feedback links there as well, or you can shoot us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com for any questions, comments, concerns, or feedback. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week for another episode of Lords of Limited.